Welcome to Groundwire Community Radio News, brought to you by volunteers at Canada's community radio stations. This episode of Groundwire was produced on the traditional territory of the Mississaugas of the New Credit. In this episode...
Social movements are at risk, LGBT people, black people are going to suffer a lot. There will be a great deal of repression. Bolsonaro said that he will give a green light for the police to kill.
In it, he said children and teens across the province will be at significantly higher risk of abuse and mistreatment because of your reckless and ill-informed decision to abolish the child advocate.
Berta Cáceres was an indigenous Lenca leader from Honduras. The Lenca people had been struggling for many years to stop the construction of a hydroelectric project in their territory.
But first, here are the headlines. Our first headline comes from Michael Welch at CKUW in Winnipeg, Manitoba.
The Venezuela Peace Committee, a Winnipeg-based group focused on the situation in Venezuela, is expressing concern about the Canadian government's approach to handling the crisis in the South American country. One of its members, Alan Freeman, had initiated a petition in late November of 2017 calling for Canadian sanctions against the Venezuelan government to be lifted. The Canadian government's official response, tabled by Foreign Affairs Minister Chrystia Freeland, spoke of the sanctions as targeting individuals responsible for or complicit in the deterioration of democracy, violations of human rights, and acts of corruption. Freeman finds the government's position problematic in that it has taken provocative actions against Venezuela based on what it calls reasonable grounds, but has yet to release the evidence to Canadians or to the accused. Freeman also notes that the sanctions constitute collective punishment of the Venezuelan people being enacted as part and parcel of a U.S.-backed regime change agenda.
Doesn't mean there's no problems in the country. The issue is whether regime change makes things better. It doesn't. What regime change in agenda in Venezuela would mean is there would be a civil war in Latin America.
The Venezuelan Peace Committee will provide a more comprehensive response to the government's Venezuela statement at the site nosanctions.org. From Winnipeg on occupied Anishinaabe Gakin, the homeland of the Métis Nation and the historical territory of the Nahiowak and the Nakota, this is CKUW's Michael Welch for Groundwire.
Our next headline comes from Catherine Fisher at CJLY in Nelson, British Columbia.
The Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives has released a new report indicating that Ontario's labour market continues to show stubborn patterns of employment and income inequality along racial and gendered lenses. Called Persistent Inequality, Ontario's Colour-Coded Labour Market, the report presents a portrait of the province's racialized labour market as of 2016 as compared to similar data from 2006. The study finds that racialized workers in Ontario continue to experience higher unemployment rates and significant wage gaps compared to non-racialized workers. The report states that there were 3.9 million racialized individuals living in Ontario in 2016, representing 29% of Ontario's population, a notable increase from 23% of the population in 2006. Provincial unemployment rates for non-racialized men and women in Ontario are 7% and 6.3%, respectively. Unemployment rates were found to be considerably higher for racialized women, 10%, and racialized men, 8.7%. Racialized women were most likely to be in the lowest-paying occupations. The share of racialized women, 25.1%, working in occupations that fall in the bottom 10% of average earnings, was 66% higher than the share of non-racialized men, 15%. Labor market discrimination remains gendered and racialized. Racialized women earn 58 cents for every dollar non-racialized men earned. The report concludes that addressing the labor market discrimination faced by racialized workers will require a deeper understanding of racism and the different ways it is manifested in the labor market for different racialized groups. This then needs to be used to shape policy. The report, authored by Sheila Block and Grace Edward Galabuzzi, can be found on the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives website at policyalternatives.ca.
You're listening to Groundwire, your source for news from the ground up. Available online at groundwirenews.ca and airing on your community radio station. Now it's time for our feature stories. Our first feature comes from Greg McDougall in Ottawa, Ontario, where community members are standing in solidarity with Brazilian and Guatemalan activists.
Considerable attention has been directed toward Latin America in the wake of the election of a fascist leader in Brazil and a migrant caravan fleeing harsh conditions in the Central American countries of Honduras and Guatemala. In the first half of November, community members in Ottawa had an opportunity to hear from speakers from the region soliciting assistance from Canadians in their freedom struggles. The first event was held on November 1st, only 4 days after Jair Bolsonaro's election to the Brazilian presidency. Hosted by Inter Pares and the Blue Planet Project of the Council of Canadians, the Ottawa event featured Maria Lucia Mendonca, a Brazilian human rights lawyer and executive director of the Network for Social Justice and Human Rights, and Max Garquez, an Ottawa-based labor lawyer. Greg McDougall of EquitableEducation.ca attended this event and got to hear the speakers break down the significant challenges facing Brazilians.
We are at risk. Social movements are at risk. LGBT people, black people are going to suffer a lot. There will be a great deal of repression. Bolsonaro said that he will give a green light for the police to kill. So already we have seen attacks, people are being attacked on the streets. So I would like to, you know, to just focus on that and what we can do. And I think that what you both offer is very important.
I would believe that 20% of the Brazilian population voted because he is homophobic, because he is racist, because he is misogynistic. We have had in the last few weeks a number of deaths caused by his supporters, just killing Workers' Party supporters on the streets, three deaths, and dozens and dozens of physical aggressions. So people now feel empowered to attack people, to attack women, to attack people of Afro ancestry, and the attack on labor rights most likely is going to be dramatic. He has talked about just shutting down the labor justice in Brazil altogether. And it's dramatic how workers and blue-collar workers voted for a guy that's going to be clearly against his interests.
A little under 2 weeks later, on November 14th, community members in Ottawa got a chance to catch a speaker from Guatemala. Marcelo Subuc Chalcat is national coordinator of the Highlands Committee of Small Farmers, or CCDA, in Guatemala. Chalcat pointed to problems resulting from hydro damming, mining, and large agricultural industries. He also highlighted issues with corruption in the country and the links between the current president, the gangs, drug traffickers, as well as corrupt business interests. The country has been subjected to a wave of repression over the past year, which saw 21 human rights defenders killed.
Food security, they couldn't care less. Right now we have 1 million children under the age of 5 who are suffering malnutrition. So the population of Guatemala is 17 million, approximately 17.1 million, and about half that population is suffering from malnutrition, extreme poverty. And the level of corruption in the country is so great, it's known, it's really, really bad, that two of the former presidents are in jail, Colom and Molina, as one of the vice presidents. A number of ministers are being accused of being part of criminal gangs. This isn't just individual corruption, this is they're part of these criminal gangs that are operating in the region, etc. So all of these areas are really threatening the status quo and all these corrupt elements, including the narco traffickers who work in these geographical areas. So I just want to say that I said that. So I think my point I want to make is that the CCDA, from our point of view, and not just ourselves, Breaking the Silence, Education Action, I think we're all seeing as it's extremely, the organization is not vulnerable as our organization. The leaders and the activists are vulnerable.
Audio for that report was provided by Greg McDougall of equitableeducation.ca. From Winnipeg on occupied Anishinaabeg-Akin, the homeland of the Métis Nation and the historical territory of the Nahiowak and the Nakota, this is CKUW's Michael Welch for Groundwire.
Thank you to Michael Welch for editing the audio in that report. Hang tight, we'll be right back after this musical break. Groundwire, your source for community radio news from coast to coast to coast. You just heard Mr. Ty by the Black Bear Singers from the album Natsimik. Our next feature comes from Elizabeth Boyd at CJRU The Scope in Toronto, Ontario, on the closing of the Office of the Provincial Advocate for Children and Youth.
The Eye-Opener reported last week that about 40 Ryerson community members participated in a protest against the Ford government's decision to cancel the Provincial Advocate for Children and Youth. However, they were not able to prevent Bill 57 from being passed. Ontario's child advocate Erwin Ellman wrote in a statement, "To say that we are disappointed is a massive understatement. There are no words." When the news first was announced on November 15th in the province's fall economic statement, many people were shocked. Although the final decision seems to have been made, supporters of the Ontario Child Advocate have not given up. The president of Ontario's Public Service Employees Union, Warren Thomas, wrote in an open letter to Premier Doug Ford that he had made a mistake. In it, he said children and teens across the province will be at significantly higher risk of abuse and mistreatment because of your reckless and ill-informed decision to abolish the child advocate. Premier Doug Ford has not responded to this letter. In fact, Toronto's Emergency Housing Agency mocked his recent tweet about the release of the top baby names of 2018. They said, "Sad, you're so interested in your name making a list. Why not focus your attention on restoring the Ontario Advocate and make a difference, honestly, restoring the public's trust while improving upon accountability?" Originally created to protect the rights of youth in foster care, the Ontario Provincial Advocate for Children and Youth was set up as an independent office of the Legislative Assembly. However, through their work, they have also released several youth-guided reports on the conditions of children in care across the province and created government-funded programming to uplift the voices of children across Ontario. One including the Youth Radio United program that aired three seasons on CJRU 1280 AM.
Through that experience, I was actually able to learn about all of the children's rights that aren't always talked about. We don't always hear about that. So I really feel like the Advocacy Office gave us not only a platform, but confidence and just the awareness that, hey, if we can do this, what more can we do? Like, you know?
That was Yasmin Gray, who participated in the YRU program last year and is a former youth in care. CJRU's general manager, Jackie Harrison, says the YRU program was one of a kind.
If you think about all the mainstream media that you consume, how often is programming produced by young people for young people? And if you don't think that that is different, just talk to a young person about what is actually on their mind, and you'll note that it's very different from what CBC or CTV or CNN is giving you. It's a different world when it's from an under 18's perspective.
I had the privilege to speak with Ontario's provincial advocate Erwin Ellman on the phone when the news broke out about the many other programs the office supported.
Around November 20th, which is National Child Day, and that's coming up, I think, tomorrow.
Yeah, it is tomorrow.
Around that day, for about a week to 10 days, I spent it on the road, just traveling around the province, listening to children and youth in my mandate. So I would invite myself in some ways to organizations and ask them to bring young people they serve together, and most were always willing to do that, whether it was a youth custody facility or a residential care service provider or a school for children with special needs, kids in care, a group of kids in care. I would travel the province and just speak to young people. Well, actually not even speak to young people, listen to young people about what they were saying so that I could better inform where we needed to put forward our advocacy for them, where their voices need to be heard.
You are listening to The Scope News on CJRU 1280 AM in Toronto. I'm Elizabeth Boyd.
Our final feature comes from Billy Pierre from Media Co-op and CFRO, Vancouver Co-op Radio, following up on a story from November on Canadian mining in Honduras and the refugee migrant caravan.
This is a Media Co-op production with Billy Pierre. Since the late 90s, Canada has been heavily invested in Honduras, owning 80% of the mining projects in the country and significant manufacturing and real estate development. With Canada's increased involvement, the country experienced higher levels of political repression, displacement, and militarization. While limiting the numbers of refugees able to seek asylum in Canada through the U.S.-Canada Safe Third Country Agreement, which requires migrants to fly to Canada. In recent years, migration to the U.S. has increased. Under the Trump administration, there's been an unseen level of crackdowns on migrants and the practice of separating children from their families. In the past 2 years, nearly 15,000 children have been held in U.S. government custody. The practice has been for these children to be released to family that is based in the U.S., but in the past 2 years, nearly 3,000 of these children were released with sponsors and have been lost track of, raising the concern that they may have been sponsored by human traffickers posing as family members. In late October, a migrant caravan set off from Honduras to cross the U.S. border. It swelled to 7,000 people as people joined as it passed through El Salvador and Guatemala. People faced repression along the way. In Mexico, they were mostly well received. This trip still was dangerous. Over 100 people were kidnapped in Veracruz, and over 70 of them were trafficked. Trump had also stationed 5,000 U.S. soldiers guarding the U.S. border to prevent anyone from crossing. On November 25th, about 500 people attempted to cross the border and were met with tear gas and rubber bullets. Today we'll hear from Jackie McVicker and Joe Sini. Jackie McVicker is a longtime activist who's worked with mining-affected communities in Central America for over 10 years. She'll be giving an update on the outcome of the trials that were held for 8 men who were charged with playing a role in the murder of Honduran Indigenous leader Berta Cáceres.
Berta Cáceres was an Indigenous Lenca leader from Honduras. The Lenca people had been struggling for many years to stop the construction of a hydroelectric project in their territory. Berta and other leaders were systematically persecuted for their leadership in their resistance to the project, which threatened a sacred river. 7 people were convicted of the murder of Berta Cáceres. They included senior military officer of the Honduran army, a manager for DESA, the hydroelectric company working to build a dam, and a former head of security for the company, as well as 4 men, young men, who were paid to carry out the murder. In the court ruling, the judges found that DESA Corporation were involved in planning and carrying out her murder. This means that more people must be investigated, including senior members of the board of directors and the staff of the company. In order for there to be true justice, the license for the hydroelectric project must also be canceled because to date it is still valid.
Next up is Joe Sini, a longtime land defender that resides in so-called Winnipeg, Manitoba.
My name is Joe from the Wolf Clan. I'm Anishinaabe Kwe. I'm from the north, and I just wanted to send some words to our relatives in the south that we're disgusted in what's going on and what's happening to our people down there. It's horrible what's happening to our children down there. In this last couple days, we've been trying to think of ways that we can send a shout out to you guys to let you know that we actually care and that we know that this is wrong what they're doing to our people and that you are our people. You are not the immigrants. They're the immigrants. The governments and the elite and all these people that are thriving off the poverty of our peoples in this whole continent are the monsters and the beasts, along with industry, who are raping lands and raping our women and stealing our children and criminalizing our men all across this continent. We look at the people in the South, women that stood up and spoke up for the land and the waters and their children. A lot of them are being murdered down there. We remember Berta Cáceres. And even up here, our women are being criminalized for standing up. Our men are being criminalized for standing up, for saying no and protecting water and lands. And we need to band together as our tribes. And we need to tell Trudeau and Trump and all these immigrants to stop this violence against us. They are not a sovereign country. These are not sovereign countries. And the sovereigns are our original people of this land. All the tribes are the sovereigns. And that's what we have to reconnect with. And to those babies over there, we see what's happening to you, and it's disgusting. It's horrible what's happening to those children out there. How can you live and allow that to happen to those children? All these police and the border patrols, it's the same that they're doing up here in Canada, the violence that they do to our people. I experienced that in Emerson, Manitoba, so-called Canada, where they pepper sprayed us. And my son, a 9-year-old boy, was in the line of the pepper spray, and myself and the men, they beat our men and they detained us because who we are as Indian people. We don't let that go. We know who we are. And maybe we were born into a system that they view us as a commodity, which is a lie. We are not a commodity, and stop using us and thriving off our lives for your benefit, because we know you're the cannibals. You know who I'm talking to, you elite. You're disgusting and you're evil. I just want to say to our relatives in the South, we are the same people, and we love you, and stay strong, and you have the right to roam. Chimigwich, stay strong, my people.
You've just heard from Jo Sini, an Anishinaabe Kwe, an Anishinaabe woman who lives in Winnipeg, Manitoba. In the North, when we stand up to protect our land, we pray and are guided by our ancestors. And many of us know about the condor and eagle prophecy. Many of us have taken part in the Peace and Dignity Run that takes place every 4 years, that start from Alaska and Chile and converge in Panama, that are made up of Indigenous people who are running to rebuild unity we once had. A few years ago, the U.S. was using tear gas on Native people at Standing Rock who were fighting the Dakota Access Pipeline. And today, many of us land defenders stand with the migrant caravan who are trying to cross that border for their survival.
That's it for our feature stories. We'll be right back after this.
Sleepwalking, my hands they reach out, touch my body and pull me close.
Just heard Close by Lal from the album Find Safety. Welcome back to Groundwire, your source for news from the ground up. Available online at groundwirenews.ca and airing on your local community radio station. Now it's time for our community radio report. Earlier this month, the Canadian Radio, Television, and Telecommunications Commission released a decision denying a license application for a new Christian music radio station in Lachute, Quebec. The station proposed to use the same frequency used by CKHQ-FM, Kanasatake, United Voices Radio, a low-power community station serving the Indigenous Reserve about 25 kilometers away. Gal Mahadevan from CKUT in Montreal, Quebec, brings us this community radio report on this victory for Indigenous voices.
In a win for Indigenous language and cultural preservation, CKHQ 101.7 in Ganesatage, a Mohawk language community radio station, is celebrating a recent CRTC decision. The CRTC denied the application of a Christian music station broadcasting in Lachute from overtaking CKHQ's frequency, jeopardizing the future of the radio station. Groundwire had a chance to speak to Sid Gaspé, co-founder of CKHQ 101.7 in Ganesatage. Here's what he had to say.
In April of 2018, we filed an intervention against the application of the Lachute radio station because they were wanting to use the same frequency as 101.7 FM in Gunasadage. And they were able to do so because we were on an unprotected frequency. We had a 45-page intervention, and in the intervention, we had to prove that the Lachute station would not get their license based on their application, not based on the technical aspect, because we had no leg to stand on from a technical point of view. So everything played out on a political level in this case. Because of our intervention, the CRTC took a closer look at the Christian music station's application, and they actually said in the decision that they didn't provide a quality application, and they didn't demonstrate an understanding of the regulations and policies for commercial radio and for religious broadcasting. So on those grounds, they denied their application. And with that, well, we had a great sigh of relief because we've been waiting since the hearing date of May 31st, 2018, and the decision came out December 3rd, 2018. Now we can go ahead and apply for a protected frequency. So the plan is to go for more than 50 watts and also apply for a new type of license. If we can get over that threshold of 50 watts, we will become a protected station. And that way, the Christian station in Lachute cannot come back with an appeal to their application. So they can do that. They can go back to the drawing board and learn from what they did and come back and absolutely try again. What this entails to get more power on the same frequency is to see how far we can go, because we're squeezed in between a bunch of other radio stations. So when you're looking at 101.7, well, you have 101.9 on one side and you have 101.5 on the other side. So you have to do a study through broadcast engineers where they will see how much power can you give without interfering with those stations. So we had a study done, but the study was just preliminary, so we have to put in much more money. And these things cost in the order of $10,000. Besides the whole issue around this application and the frequency, the station is no longer able to broadcast out of its location because the building is condemned. There's been water damage and the equipment's really outdated. So we have to fundraise. So we have to start from nothing, actually. We also have to apply for a nonprofit corporation status and set up a corporation with a board of directors and with a certain set of bylaws to regulate the corporation so that we can accept funding from different sources. We don't have anything. We don't have any equipment. We don't have any building to set up in. So there's a lot of money to raise to do this so that we can continue to invest in building and equipment. For those who want to know what's going on and keep up to date with our project, you can always check out our Facebook page at Reviving Gunasadage Radio. RKR is the acronym. Just punch that in and you'll find out there how you can help us fundraise for a new radio station in Gunasadage.
For Groundwire, this is Gaushika Mahadevan from CKUT 90.3 FM in Jajage or Montreal.
That's it for this edition of Groundwire. Music this week was by the Black Bear Singers and Lal. We thank all of our amazing contributors, as well as Ome Salma Rahamdala. 2018 is almost a wrap. Join us for the next episode of Groundwire, releasing on Monday, December 31st, where we'll look back at some of the biggest news stories of the year. Tune in on your local community radio station or download at groundwirenews.ca.